Hi, welcome to this third episode of the Yellow and Blues podcast. I'm your host, Srini Parthasarathy, and I'm joined by my co-host Venkat. Where do we start? I mean, this week, I guess, that the one big news, so to speak, to start, yeah. You know, is the loss, the biggest loss, I guess, in the cricketing world, with the death of Shane Warne on 4th March. Hi, Venkat, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. A bit on the somber mood, I should say, because of the passing away of one of the greatest or the greatest leg spinner I have seen, and I think the whole cricketing world has seen. I think it is. It's. I mean, there are many cricketers who have passed away in the past. I don't think any one of us had felt that personal connection. It's almost like losing a distant relative. So it's like that. I mean, that's the impact he had created. Obviously, yeah. You know, the tributes from people well in the cricketing, you know, cricketing annals have come and said that this is indeed a shocking news. Nobody expected him to go at 52 for the reasons. It's terribly shocking. It's terribly saddening.
Yeah, I think that the point you made about, like, you know, it's, yeah, many cricketers passed. I mean, the day before that, you know, Rod Marsh passed, you know, and Shane Warne had actually tweeted about it 12 hours ago, like, yeah. You know, with the passing of Rod Marsh passed. While, you know, for Australian cricket, that would have been, you know, and people of a certain age probably, for those of us who kind of, you know, in the last 30 years, essentially, like, you know, Shane Warne probably was a big, big part of our cricketing lives, you know, and you're absolutely right. It's one of those moments for, I think, for cricket fans, not just Australian cricket fans, you know, but cricket fans across the world, you know, they would probably remember when they heard the news, what they were doing. It is one of those kind of moments. It was massive, you know. He's probably been a part of our lives. You know, for us Indians, we probably say, like, you know, Tendulkar has been a part of our growing from a childhood, yeah. And Shane Warne is probably, like, you know, the exact same thing from a creating perspective. You know, worldwide, he's been with us for about 15 years. You know, as a player, and then probably the last 15 years, even as a commentator, he was, like, you know, absolutely larger than life. And you're right, you know, there's probably not many of us who would have not tried to bowl a Shane Warne leg spin delivery, you know, or attempted to bowl kind of thing. What are your memories of Shane?
Yeah, I think I've watched in the 98 test in Chennai. One of the things was to, you know, see how the run-up was, you know, the outfield, you know, the chat and the engagement he had with the Chennai crowd. Those were all some of the memories I got to watch him live, which is really privileged. You know, yes, of course, that test was. I mean, Chennai is not the best place for spinners at that point in time. The heat and but this show that Australians and specifically Shane Warne had put in was fantastic. I think one of the greatest achievements off field, or I should say in terms of you know, beyond the Australian cricket, is also the IPL. I had a hunch when he was made the captain for Rajasthan Royals that he might pull out the win, you know, the proverbial bunny out of the magic hat, which he did. I mean, and he also was mentor to Ravi Jadeja, and you know, it's almost like a tribute that he paid with his 170 in the wickets haul in the test. And I think Harshad Bogle mentioned about that I think Jadeja tweeted back saying, yes, indeed. So, yeah, I think it's the spotting of talent, it's mentoring, it's these things of Australian cricket. And because any kind of search would reveal what he's done for Australian cricket, it's simply staggering. And I think one thing that people might miss is his ability in field, especially in the slip. He was really on par. Mark Waugh was the best, but Shane Warne was closely followed.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, the first IPL back in 2008, wasn't it? 2008 when Rajasthan Royals. Yeah, I don't think anybody gave that team a chance.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, sort of what he achieved, the whole, I guess the sort of picking gems, raw gems, and polishing them, and raw talent. You know, that's definitely the one that came out. I think it's fair to say, like, you know, he, you know, due to his off-field persona and off-field issues and stuff, he was probably one of the best captains that Australia never had.
Yeah.
On pure cricketing talent, you would have thought that, you know, he would definitely have been a captain for Australia, but it's kind of the off-field issues that went along with him. You know, it's probably one of the reasons why he missed out. Here at Hampshire as well, I think he's greatly loved in England, you know, both in England overall and with Hampshire as well. And, you know, because of the success that he bought them, the last thing, you know, he was just like, you know, the coach of the London, I don't remember the name's name, but the London 100 team. And he was, it's a bit unlucky that, you know, they didn't quite do well last year. Literally, like, I think it's a couple of weeks ago on a Sky Sports podcast, I saw, like, you know, where he said, like, you know, he was looking to, like, you know, do much better with the 100 team in this year. But then he was also kind of, you know, interested in terms of becoming the coach for the English national team. The guy, like, you know, cricketing, we've all seen his sort of cricketing talent, you know, from the ball he bowled to Mike Gatting, you know, or the Andrew Stoss delivery, you know, the Mike Gatting ball of the century and all. There's no denying his cricketing talent, you know. But I think beyond the cricketing talent, he also had a very, very good cricketing brain. And in terms of spotting, and, you know, which came out during his kind of later years when I did the commentary.
Yes, he almost was predicting some of the dismissals. And I think in one of the BBL games, I remember how he set up McCallum, I think it was. So he was live chatting or live commenting what his strategy was and how he would get McCallum, and he got it like that. So those are simply genius moments. Only geniuses could pull off something like that. And he was almost he is the greatest leg spinner. There's no doubt about it. And in my opinion, you know, one of the greatest cricketers Australia will ever produce.
Yeah, and it's fair to say, like, you know, the world of cricket has never been the same since the arrival of SK Warne, and it probably won't be the same since his passing away as well. That's probably, I think, the biggest tribute one could ever give to him is, like, you know, it's, yeah, none of us saw Bradman, but, you know, I think we must count ourselves really lucky to be having lived in the time of Shane Warne in terms of, you know, the joy he brought to cricket fans worldwide, not just Australian fans, but across the globe. All you can say is rest in peace and long live the king.
Yes, indeed. I think that's the perfect tribute. I mean, we are not going to do justice with our cricketing knowledge and pedigree to pay respect to one of the greatest. Yes, of course, it's a sad moment. And people all over and the cricketing world at large is mourning. So, yes, indeed. It also draws to attention, you know, how much heart disease and heart conditions is so much of an issue, and everybody over 40 needs to, you know, kind of look after. If it can happen to an athlete, it could happen to everybody. So on that somber note, I think we will move on. Saha Gate, or do you want to talk about that, Srini?
Yeah, the Saha Gate, it's an interesting one, no? YPU gate, on the other hand, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know where it's kind of, you know, this age of social media. I know the journalist, you know, Borya Majumdar has come back and he's kind of provided his own response or his own timeline and version of the events as to how he sees it. And said that, like, you know, he's obviously going to, like, you know, sort of, I think file a defamation suit against Ridhwan Saha and then provide more details. But it, again, we talked about this in the last couple of weeks or so, and it shows, like, you know, the unholy nexus between, I guess, journalists and cricketers, and something that seems to be playing out in the public now, thanks to the social media.
Yeah, I think that is fair to say. This is more like, you know, how kids of a certain age come up from school and said, he said this and I said this. I think it's all a bit kiddish. I think the cricketing world has moved beyond that. I don't think it is making the news circle or the news rounds as you would expect. I think once people have moved on is the feel I got. It's not high on anybody's agenda to find out. I think it is up to the board to regulate that relations a bit in terms of how that nexus happens. But in a way, if you read from what the journalists side, I think ESPN Cricket Info covered this a bit, and other leading journalists covered it a bit, is that there is always going to be that gray area between how journalists engage with players and vice versa in today's day and age. So yes, of course, I think we should, and the cricketing world has moved. I think for me, it is much ado about nothing. It does turn out, and I think there was some substance in Saha's anguish, but you know, I don't think it should be dragging on for this long.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, kind of, you know, sort of moving on. Just before we kind of, you know, we'll probably do the second part of this podcast, looking at kind of, you know, India's performances both against Sri Lanka and also sort of, you know, the women's in the World Cup. Two other sort of interesting piece of news, if you like. One was, like, you know, Ramesh Raza announcing that the PCB is to launch the women's PSL. I think it's kind of, you know, great news, but it probably now puts the ball in the BCCI court. You know, I know the BCCI have been having the Challenger Trophy for women, you know, during the IPL by creating those four teams. But I think I personally believe, you know, it's high time that India had a women's IPL, you know, especially, I think, 2017, when, you know, in the World Cup, you know, India finished runners-up, you know, the Indian women's in the, already the 50-over World Cup. But I think in the last 5 years, Indian women team has grown leaps and bounds. And it's an ideal time for India to get its own women's IPL.
Yeah, perfectly. You know, this is the right time, perfectly summed up, Srini. But from my point of view, I think Ramesh Raja and Pakistan Cricket Board have been a bit cheeky, because already there were calls from various fronts. This is just my personal opinion and take. I always assume positive intent. It is always good. Competition in this area is especially good if India and Pakistan try to outdo each other in this space. Women's cricket is what's going to benefit, and I welcome that. But yes, of course, we need to also look at, you know, how India is not going to respond, but to respond to the calls that have been made by fair few number of players, fans. I think for that to happen, I see England T100 model, which is that, you know, you have a game in the morning, or the first half of the day, 3 to 5 or whatever that time is, and then closely followed so that you bring in the fans. And so I think there is a number of opportunities that could be made to work. I don't know why India aren't doing it, but having said that, once the number of IPL games come down, I think there will be definitely an opportunity to the IPL, women's IPL only can push the world women's cricket to a greater height.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know we probably spend a little bit more time next week, you know, looking at the IPL schedule. You know, that's just been announced as such. And I think that there's about 12 doubleheaders that's been announced. Absolutely, like, you know, to get it started, you know, that probably makes a lot more sense in the terms of, you know, having the women's IPL in conjunction with the men's and doing it as doubleheader. That will be like, you know, a good start. So sort of, you know, giving it more exposure. But the reality is, I think it is high time that the BCCI sort of, you know, started thinking about the women's IPL. Segueing, you know, kind of from the women's IPL into, like, you know, sort of the Women's World Cup in New Zealand. It got started on the 4th of March. It's about 4 or 5 games now in, and it's been very, 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 very interesting start. The first game, New Zealand, the host New Zealand, kind of, you know, West Indies. I don't know if you got a chance, you know, to watch it, especially given our, like, time zones, you know, in terms of where, for us in England, you know, it's kind of a pretty late start. So I don't know if you got to watch it on work week, but it was quite interesting. Like, you know, so the game went down to, like, almost the last over. Well, it went down to the last over with 6 needed, and, you know, strangely enough, Ian Smith was commentating for New Zealand. I think if he was an Indian, they would have been calling him as, like, you know, oh yeah, he's just being bad luck, sort of thing. But it just a jokes apart sort of thing. Deanna Dotton, she hadn't quite bowled at all, and then she asked for the ball and said, like, you know, well, I'm going to bowl the last over.
I don't know
if you saw that.
Yeah, I think I read the report. I didn't have the chance to look at the game, but I read the report that the captain mentioned if Dotton is asking for the ball, you just hand it over. I thought, yeah, it's a bit like the cricket we play, that it's led by democracy rather than captaincy. But anyway, it was funny.
Yeah, but ultimately, though, she delivered it. That's what it counts, and ultimately, she delivered, and, like, you know, New Zealand lost by 3 runs. It was quite an interesting match when there was a couple of hundreds to start with. Like, you know, the Hayley Matthews scored one for West Indies, and then Sophie Devine. I think as long as Sophie Devine was batting, you know, there seems to be, like, you know, a good chance that New Zealand would win. But once they lost Sophie Devine, I think the game's kind of slightly, like, you know, shifted. Then obviously the following day was the big ones, you know, the favourites, Australia, and, you know, last year's or the defending world champion, England, two powerhouse teams, so to speak, in women's cricket, and they're just coming on the back of a women's Ashes, which Australia won convincingly. They thrashed England. Again, it was a fair to say, like, you know, when Australia scored, I think it was 310 with Rachel Haynes getting 100. At that point, you know, it didn't look like England would kind of, you know, get anywhere near 300. But then Nat Siver sort of decided, like, well, I'm not going to give up so easily. And in spite of the, like, you know, the women's Ashes loss and everything else, it, again, another close thriller where they fell short by about 12 runs. So it's just goes back to our original point about, like, you know, how well women's cricket is doing, and, like, you know, they are scoring over 300 runs now, and kind of in a quite competitive matches. That's just going to the, like, you know, last over. I hope the rest of the tournament is just as exciting as this in terms of the game.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I mean, I've been following this for some time. I mean, I think the World Cup cricket is, in general, the benchmark of how teams are performing and what level they are playing. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see how it pans out.
I mean, and then the big one for us, though, from, you know, this podcast being, you know, focused on Indian cricket and India, Pakistan, we talked about this last week. You know, it's always any format of the game, whether it's not even cricket, you know, even if it's hockey, it's, like, you know, a big thing. So it's India, Pakistan, women was obviously going to be, like, you know, big fan following. I followed the whole game, you know, sort of even though it was late night, start midnight start for us. You know, I actually watched the whole game.
Wow. I think I caught up for some time and watched the highlights at the end. I knew that, you know, India was a stronger team, should I say, at least for now. And then in the past 11 encounters or something, I think 10 encounters they've won. So I was reasonably sure about the result, but there was a bit of anxious moment, I suppose, when I think it was 6 down for, and then yeah, the India managed to recover really well from 114 for 6 with a partnership. I saw the game and some of the short square of the wickets was fantastic. Rana and Vostrekar, both, they just, I mean, that was a really good recovery. I think that gave, once it crossed 240, I think it was beyond Pakistan. I think that was my take.
Yeah, I think when I was watching, and we were at 114 for 6, you know, having lost all the big guns in terms of, you know, I mean, Shefali Verma was out for a duck. I think this is the second time in 3 innings. She was in good form in, you know, the New Zealand series, but then at the tail end of the New Zealand series, her form started to tail down as well. But, I mean, Smriti Mandhana, she got a half century. So, but then once we had lost, like, you know, Shefali, Smriti, I think Richa Ghosh and Harmanpreet Singh and Mithali Raj, pretty much the cream of Indian batting. I didn't think that, you know, India would get to 245, 244. Probably thought, you know, around 180, 190 was probably what India was going to get to. But yeah, great skill shot by Sneh Rana and, you know, Pooja Vostrekar to get us to 244. Once 244 was reached, I think after that India's bowlers basically took charge. Jalan Goswami and Co, like, you know, sort of, it was essentially their show at that point. You know, once they had got there, it's a massive win. You know, hopefully, like, yeah, you know, it has good effect on India's net run rate and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, I think it is. The difference is good. And I also, one thing I wanted to, you know, kind of bring from that game, I think, is the camaraderie between the two teams. I think Bisma Mehroof's captain's daughter, Fatima, was it? Yeah, Fatima, her name. It's a big, and then there has been, you know, Twitter photos doing rounds in Twitter where all the Indian players were, you know, kind of having a, you know, tender moment with the baby. They were, you know, all playing with it, with Bisma being at the center. That was a really good, I don't think, if our listeners haven't seen that picture or Twitter, I think we should do. I think we have tweeted in our Twitter account, LO1 Blues, which they can, you know, follow and see. That was wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's nice. I mean, there is another, you know, story onto that side in terms of, you know, the fact that there are almost there are actually 6 mothers, you know, across this women's tournament. You know, actually there are 6 mothers playing, which is a massive story for, you know, women's cricket again. You know, it kind of says, like, you know, once, you know, people go and have baby, they can come back and sort of continue to play. And yeah, Bisma Mehroof leading Pakistan. So that's another positive story for this World Cup. Long may it continue, you know, in terms of this Women's World Cup. Moving on from the Women's World Cup, you know, in kind of the other India game that's happening, the India Sri Lanka test. I mean, we recording this on the Monday evening, you know, and this was supposed to, like, you know, the test was supposed to go until tomorrow, the 5th day of the test. But yeah, it was such a surprise that, you know, by the end of the day, in not so much in terms of from a skill and a talent perspective, or where India are versus where Sri Lanka are. It was more, I guess, a surprise for me was, the pitch at Mohali wasn't what you would call, like, you know, a day one you know, square turner to say like, no, one, which is why the game ended in 3 days. It was nowhere near. It was a good batting surface, you know, as
it was.
Shown by the fact that, you know, kind of, you know, India put up 500 plus runs, but to bowl out Sri Lanka for twice, you know, it's a bit of a surprise.
You wouldn't say that when you looked at Virat Kohli's dismissal. I thought it would turn a little bit. I mean, yes, I was hoping that once Kohli crosses 50, he would go on to make... that was what I had thought about. You know, he's not going to get that chance in the second innings, obviously. I knew that once Pant scored that 97. I was hoping that he would play a bit more circumspect, and I understand that you said in our conversation that it's because he was playing circumspect was why he got out. I mean, yes, there are two sides to that argument, but I do think that you know, it is definitely a score in the winning cause. Ravi Jadeja 175 was, you know, really belligerent. I mean, it was like watching one of those big, I mean, Ravi Jadeja is always a big player, but it was watching like somebody like Ben Stokes or McCallum or people like, you know, really who would boss the game when they are on song. It felt like that, which was good, which is good for Indian cricket and batting at now. And it shows the confidence when the leadership places a confidence on the player that they reciprocate most often than not.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, it is. I think Jadeja, going back to our initial conversation around, like, you know, the rockstar Shane Warne, you know, he identified him in a T20I and kind of, you know, from there to where Ravi Jadeja is today, I think he's come a long, long way. His bowling was always like in Indian condition, he was just lethal, but his batting is like, you know, for Saurashtra and stuff, like, you know, he has got 3 triple 100, so you knew the batting talent was there. It's just about, like, you know, sort of bringing it out into India colors.
Yeah, definitely. Dinesh Karthik was mentioning on the podcast and some of he did with Harsha Bogle that once is great, twice is okay, twice is impossible almost, but thrice triple scoring, triple century is just phenomenal for any batsman. So, and the quality of Indian cricket, even at first class level, is going to be terrific. I mean, you can't just score triple centuries if you don't have the talent.
Yeah, I mean, this is like third consecutive game, I think, for which Ravi Jadeja has been like the player of the match, you know, at Mohali.
Exactly.
So,
what do you think? I mean, should he have gone ahead and scored 200? I have a different perspective, but I would like to hear from you, Shri. What do you think about the declaration, given that the coach has a history? I don't know, younger listeners may not be recollecting, but I think in one game, Sachin was 194 and Dravid, then captain of Indian team, declared, and now he's declared, I mean, or the leadership. Now Rohit Sharma has gone ahead and declared, I mean, he was 175. What do you think?
Yeah, personally, I mean, I think there was, I know it's in hindsight, we say, like, you know, while there's like 2 days left, you know, there was plenty of time. I still think there was plenty of time for him to get to a double hundred. You know, he could have been given the options. Batting at number seven, you know, you are not going to get many opportunities to score double hundreds, you know. So if we were playing, you know, I guess, or if I was in Rohit Sharma's shoes, I know Rohit Sharma's come out and said, like, you know, Jadeja himself was given the option and he chose. But I think this is probably where the difference comes in terms of, you know, captains make a decision. You don't give a choice to a batsman, you know, you almost say, well, you give them, like, you know, a time frame and say, you've got another half an hour, go for the double hundred.
Exactly.
If he gets out, he gets out. But, you know, I think I get, like, you know, kind of players don't play for milestones and, you know, it's the team cost and all of those things. But sometimes, you know, these are opportunities that don't come across very often.
Exactly. I mean, I understand. I mean, there was no hurry in the game. There was nothing that was going to happen. I remember watching Sanat Jayasurya score that massive 300-something, 330-something. That game. I think they nearly scored about 1,000 runs or something crazy like that. I think we don't have to go into that level, but at least, you know, the game was still pretty much open. There was no, in my opinion, there was no necessity for declaration at all. You should just let the game play and you know, these milestones don't come up.
One other kind of, you know, important milestone just ticked by was like, you know, Ashwin going past Kapil Dev and becoming India's second leading wicket taker. And I mean, that juggernaut sort of, you know, continues, you know, Ashwin slightly, quietly sort of, you know, seems to be like, you know, scaling peaks.
It's almost become the norm now. I hope he stays fit and goes past Kumble. And is there a chance for another 150 wickets? Probably, maybe he'd finish as the second highest wicket taker. See.
So that's one for the future, you know, kind of to look at.
That's, no surprise that this was over in 3 days. In fact, it was over in 2 days, and I hope our next test, at least, you know, Sri Lanka put up a fight. Let's see. But you were going to say something, Srini?
No, I was just going to say, like, you know, just kind of, you know, just moving on, you know, looking into our segment of the Lions Watch, with you know, the IPL now just around the corner. I know the schedules have been announced late yesterday evening, with CSK, you know, Chennai Super Kings opening up against KKR. Couple of things I wanted to pick up on the Lions Watch. One, obviously the current Lions, you know, Deepak Chahar, he's obviously one of the big buys, you know, sort of, he's out. I think he's probably going to be out for most of the IPL. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play at all this IPL, which
I wouldn't risk. I don't think they would risk him. But let's see. I mean, if his services are required towards the latter half, given the schedule, if Chennai makes it to the you know, the top of the league and you know, playoffs.
No, I have no doubt. Yeah, exactly.
But
what I was going to say, like, you know, we all know, like, you know, the rest of the teams, even the new two teams, play basically the IPL to try and get into the final to play CSK. So that's probably where I am. Just the one other thing, kind of, you know, was going to mention was, like, you know, again, in amongst what this past week has been huge in terms of from a news perspective, something that kind of, I think, probably would have slipped most people's radar was the announcement of the new BCCI contracts. I don't know if you had the chance to look at it. Let me try and see if I can pull that out. I mean, there was a couple of things that sort of surprised me in terms of, like, you know, of the 2022 one. It was, Pujara and Rahane being dropped from A to B wasn't that.
Yeah, it was not surprising at all. But Pandya was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, that's the one that was, like, you know, the biggest one was, like, you know, I think both Shikhar Dhawan, I can still see. I think Shikhar Dhawan is probably only now more a one-day only player. And so he's not playing T20 for India test. So that seemed to be, like, you know, fair enough. He's dropped double. But yeah. Hardik Pandya, kind of, you know, it shows where, I guess, Hardik Pandya is in the scheme of things as far as India is concerned.
Yeah.
That he got dropped.
I think it's bowling. If he's not bowling, would you just play him? And the ascendancy of, you know, spinning all-rounders, especially Jadeja, definitely.
Yeah, and I guess from an IPL and a T20 perspective, with the likes of, you know, sort of, if he was to come in purely as a batsman, you would probably go, like, you know, Suryakumar Yadav, Venkatesh Iyer, Ishan Kishan. He's pretty much, you know, kind of competing against all of them. I mean, Venkatesh Iyer, you know, if he, with his bowling, sort of would probably be a good like-for-like replacement for Hardik Pandya. So, yeah, the last year or so, well, I mean, he's the captain of Gujarat Titans now. Let's see what he brings, you know, this IPL.
I'm going to watch some of those new teams and how they gel and how leadership from these people play. It would be interesting to watch.
Yeah, that'd be probably one. Anyway, so I think probably on that note, you know, let's close out this week's episode. Thanks for listening. Next week, I think we'll look at the second test Indian Sri Lanka. If I know it's only starting on Saturday, and we generally tend to record this on a Monday, but if history is any reflection, then you know, I guess by the time we are recording this next week, you know, the test may have well been over. Let's hope not, and let's hope it goes the all 5 days. And I think the other couple of things for us from an Indian perspective to look at is, like, you know, sort of the India women's team playing, I think, India, New Zealand, and then India, West Indies.
Exactly.
In the next two games that India are looking, and we'll keep an eye out on, you know, what's happening on the women's World Cup.
Yeah.
And hopefully, if we do have some time, we'll delve into the sort of, you know, IPL schedule next week. If not, maybe the week after, we can probably look at more in detail, you know, kind of do a preview of the teams and kind of know and the schedule and how CSK is kind of in 11 is, etc. We can have a look at that. But yeah, anyway, on that note, let's wrap this week up. And you know, please subscribe to us on any of the podcast platforms that you get this, and also follow us on Twitter on LONBlues and visit our website LONBlues.com. Until next week, it's goodbye from me and Venkat.